We'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the country we live and work on. This includes everything within the physical, cultural, and spiritual landscape. Landforms, waters, air, trees, animals, foods, medicines, stories, and special places. I'm on the land of the Darug and Gundungurra peoples, and Holly is on the land of the Ngunnawal and Gambri peoples.
Welcome to Somebody You Love, or The Sale of Two Titties. I'm Jenna Love.
And I'm Holly Hart.
And we're experts in disappointing our parents, breaching community guidelines, and banging the people who vote against our rights.
For this episode of Just the Tips, it's important for us to say that the sex industry is very broad, and we are just talking specifically about getting started as an independent, full-service sex worker, as that is where we both have the most experience. Our information is really only relevant for so-called Australia. The industry varies so much across different legal jurisdictions and cultural environments. And also, please don't take these episodes as us encouraging anyone to join the sex industry. If you're a listener of our show, you know that we both love our jobs so much, but that doesn't mean it is suitable for everyone. This is a journey you need to make on your own, and we're just here to give you some of our own lived experiences.
Yeah, and that's something that we discussed a little bit more in detail in the first part of this Just the Tips series. So that's episode 38, which is 30 episodes ago.
Fucking hell.
Which is insane. Isn't that insane to be able to say 30 episodes ago?
It's insane.
So that was in season 2, episode 38, where we did Just the Tips, So You Want to Be an Independent Escort Part 1. And people have been asking for us to do more episodes like that ever since, and we're only just getting around to it. So in that first part, we talked about like the very beginnings of getting into the industry as an independent escort. Is the job right for you? Where else you can get info about working in the industry, picking a name, getting photos, phone number, etc. So definitely listen to that one first if this is something that you are considering. But today we're going to move more into the logistics of the job itself. So first topic is advertising.
I feel like this is one that we discuss or we get asked about, or we're very public about our opinions on in this industry. Advertising is such a – I feel like a lot of clients that follow us on social media, and not just you and I, but sex workers in general, will have seen opinions, or they would have formed opinions on the advertising, not just based on what they've seen, but also their experiences interacting with workers and seeing what we post about it, the landscape for advertising in the sex work community. There is so much variety in terms of how you advertise, and a lot of us default to what websites are out there, but there are a million platforms and options for getting yourself or your name out there. And it's changed so much in even the past couple of decades, or just shy of a couple of decades, that you and I have been in the industry. And it really differs a lot depending on the location that you're based in as to what is the best way to advertise, because there are different methods of advertising that work better in different places. Your branding, the style of work you prefer, whether it's full service or massage, or what works for your lifestyle, like maybe you like a short notice type thing. So all of those factors have such a big impact. So we're not going to be able to come on here and tell you this site is the best or this option, this package, because it is so, so specific to your circumstances. But we can definitely have a little bit of a chat about, what the landscape's been like while we've been in the industry and what we find works for us.
Yeah, definitely. I feel really unqualified a lot of the time talking about advertising, because I have been incredibly lucky, very, very privileged, and I've not had to pay for advertising very much at all. That's because when I first started in the industry, very, very early on, somebody wrote a review of me on review websites, which we are not huge fans of. But as a result of that, I just had a lot of, it was just word of mouth, you know. And then since then, the vast majority of my work comes from social media. And that is absolutely not the case for everyone, of course. And I wouldn't suggest just using social media and hoping that that works for you. Like, I think that's probably, if you're starting out, that's probably not the best way to go about it. But I do think that not using social media, which is free, to advertise, is pretty wild. Like it's a resource that's there that you can use for free. That being said, it's free in a monetary sense, right? It doesn't cost you any money. But it does cost a lot of other things, like your soul and your time and your energy. And, you know, it's a whole kind of quote-unquote game of its own. Mm-hmm. And there are sex workers out there who don't use social media for various reasons. One of the big ones is that it just does their head in and they don't want to do it. And that's so fair. But for me personally, it's such a waste to not use that resource if you have the capacity to do so. So I think that's a really big one. I think it's also quite important. Again, you don't have to use social media to get bookings, but it can be a really great way that if somebody sees your advertising on a sex work website, that then they can click through to your social media, see that you're a real person and see that you, you know, are, I guess, serious about this work. Mm. Like you've been doing it for a little while, however long it is that you've been doing it. You've been putting up photos, whatever. It's not necessarily that you need to be posting photos all the time, but it's just showing some level of consistency and legitimacy, because unfortunately we are up against a lot of stigma. And a lot of the people looking to book a sex worker have all these ideas in their head about catfishing, about fakes, about scams, blah, blah, blah. So we do have to combat that a little bit.
Social media definitely is really important, I think, today. I know back when I first went independent, we had the receptionist at the last parlor that I worked at created a Twitter account, which is still out there. And I found pictures from it recently from me like 10 years ago, and it was so cute. But they would create posts about us. And I remember thinking, what a waste of time. Like, nobody uses Twitter. Who uses Twitter? That's so weird. And even actually back in my stripping days, we had a Facebook page for the strip club, and they encouraged all of us dancers to create social media accounts from our sex work personas, or, you know, dancer personas. And I thought, oh God, for what? Like, so people can pester us and nobody's, but over the years I've seen the value of being able to connect with the consumers and the people who potentially are going to book us, and to, as you said, create legitimacy so that people can actually not just connect with us and see some side of personality, but also see that, yeah, we're not just some two-dimensional scam written by somebody that doesn't really exist. There's an emotional connection, but also a cerebral sort of connection that you go, well, okay, this is a real person, and that it gives people a sense of certainty over who they are going to see.
And I guess the flip side as well, right? Like I was just about to say, because I genuinely 98% of my work, I think, comes from social media.
That's huge.
Every now and then, it's huge. Yeah. But I can't, like, every now and then I will put an ad up, I'll pay for an ad on a website. I do it sometimes, and I have a profile on a few websites because they're run by peers and I want to support them. And I will give them money occasionally to like boost it and whatever. But every now and then I'll put an ad up on a different website, that like one that's not run by peers necessarily, because I've got tours coming up and they're not booking up as quickly as I'd like or whatever. So I'll pop an ad up there and it literally makes no difference.
Yeah.
Wow. Like any of the bookings that I do get from that point come from my social media. So I have proven to myself that, you know, there's one particular big website that lost a lot of trust in the sex work community in Australia, that was a big one for a long time. I went off that at the beginning of 2020 and I didn't see a difference. I stopped paying for my advertising and nothing changed. So, but the reason I'm bringing that up is not to be like, oh, look how great I am, I don't have to pay for advertising. It is pretty fucking great. But the point is, it is not uncommon for me to have people who come see me and they go, oh, I didn't think you were working anymore because you weren't on the advertising sites. So as much as I think it can be a mistake to only be on sites and not on social media, the flip side can be a mistake as well. If you're only putting your effort into social media, then there's that they might kind of miss out on that professional element of not seeing you on the big escorting sites.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a bit of a balancing game.
Yeah, and I think you are definitely a unique case in this industry.
Totally.
Because, yeah, as you said, a lot of your work comes from social media and you put a lot of work into that. I think a lot of people sort of, they post a little bit on socials or they set up some auto tweets or they'll post a sentence here and there, a really generic, I'm available this week, for example, and not having any connections with people that are following them or no sort of presence. And they go, oh, well, what am I doing wrong? And I think Jenna is a really good example of how to do social media right. And it could be a contentious thing to say because there are, it's not yeah. black and white, but I think Jenna consistently posts really high quality, images that are, there's a lot of variety. So I think people think, I don't want to make assumptions, but I don't think people realize how much effort goes into a couple of those pictures that Jenna takes. She loves this sort of stuff. She loves to do her hair and makeup, but that doesn't happen automatically. She's got new outfits and lingerie all the time. She puts them together in cool ways. Her hair's not just done the same way every time. She does these little braids and these special curls and these half updos and really bright pops of different colors. And there's a lot of creativity in her hair and makeup to begin with. The outfit, sometimes you're having an off day. She's still, will get up when she's, and I'm speaking on behalf of her, but I know there'll be days where she doesn't feel that great about herself, but she does the photos anyway. And then she schedules and she puts a little fucking caption and she does this day in, day out, like really, really consistently. And I know there are times when maybe she's a little less consistent and she beats herself up because she's like, oh my God, I have to be perfect all the time. But,
like the last 4 years.
Since COVID, it was, you were like, oh my God,
I'm not posting that.
But still every couple of days, weeks, I see more photos come up and I go, fuck me.
Consistency.
Anyone who follows me on socials knows I'm not a photo girl. One, because I have problems in my head about how I look, really bad problems. That's a whole thing my psychologist and I have got to work on. But when I set up to do a little photo shoot like Jen does, it takes me half the day. It's a fuck around. It takes so much of my energy. And if you know me, that's one thing a day. That's my whole day done. I don't get paid for it. I'm exhausted. I get maybe 3 photos out of it that I absolutely don't hate. Maybe if I'm lucky. And then,
but you're a perfect example of me saying it's not just about posting a bunch of photos.
No, it's not. And I'll keep going.
Because, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you do all of this work and it drives a lot of, engagement and not just the photos, but then also you have your blog sort of persona as well. So you have another page, which is a little bit more of the nitty gritty. It's a little bit more of the downtime and the real personality. And, both of the accounts are quite cheeky. And I think all of those factors work together. But I think the most important thing is that consistency and that showing a variety of facets. Myself, on the other hand, I don't post a lot of pictures, like I said, because it's a whole freaking ordeal for me and it's so much work and it really makes you appreciate how much work somebody like Jenna puts in. But I do a lot of stream of consciousness, absolute bullshit posting, nonsense from my head, retweeting garbage. And for me, it works 100%. I get a lot of bookings from social media and it's great. And I think, again, I don't want to put like words in my clients' mouths, but I think that gives people an opportunity to connect with my real personality, the inside of who I really am, and vice versa. They can, have jokes with me and it just feels really, really good.
And you're also attracting clients who are interested in who you are, because what you're putting out there is the insanity of your brain.
Me.
And so you're attracting people who enjoy that insanity. And that's a good, it's a good setup.
Absolutely. It means
good relationships.
100%. You're getting people that are really compatible that you're spending time with. And that's fantastic. But I absolutely do not get anywhere near the proportion of my business from social media. So I do get a significant amount, or they have found me on an advertising site and then followed on socials and then gone, yeah, she's insane. I want to see her. Great.
Yeah. That's been the cincher. Is that the word? That's
clincher?
Been the thing that's,
I don't know, anyway,
got them over the line. The clincher?
Yeah, look, we don't know.
I have no idea what I'm saying.
We're not sure what language we're speaking.
Look, we're experts.
We listen to what we say. Geniuses. But yeah, definitely. I find when I do stop advertising and paying for advertising on websites, I notice a drop in my business. Maybe not always immediately. Mm. Sometimes I take them down for a few months and I just, it's an expenditure I don't want to make for a little while. But I do find that I do need to keep going back to these sites because, my business does not survive on that. And I think also a bit of Jenna, your business also comes from the fact that you would, I'm assuming, from doing media stuff. You do put yourself in the public eye. And I think that gets a lot of people in.
Yeah, it's not just social media.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. What I wanted to talk about was when I first entered the industry as a private worker, the difference between the sites I used to advertise on back then compared to now. So there were back then, there was Cracker/Backpage, which we've talked about on the show before, but that kind of site was beneficial because it was very cheap. Back then it was $1 to advertise on and it was very high rotation. Mm. You didn't have to have professional photos or anything particularly glamorous. You could take a couple of selfies, pay a dollar, and your post would be up. And my phone would ring, I would get messages. So I could go and book a hotel and I could stay at the hotel and receive the inquiries and work that night. And so that was really, really practical for the arrangement that I had at the time. Since then, I started advertising on the sites that are a little bit more expensive and they're not as high rotation. So you pay a higher monthly fee. And the expectation is to have a higher quality image or higher quality images with your profile. And that sort of doesn't rotate as often. So what I mean by that is that whoever's on that website is on that website and you contact them whenever. Whereas on one of these cheaper sort of sites, somebody is bumped to the top every time they renew their ad. And it's sort of, whoever is at the top is the most likely to be available now. And that's who people will reach out to most when they want to have a booking. So that has changed for me, but there are still a lot of those sites around. I think there's Locanto is one of them. I think Skokka is another one. And I have used them in the past, particularly when I want to fill up some shorter booking sessions. I do find the people who are on those sites are usually looking for shorter notice, shorter sessions, mm-hmm. And affordability mm-hmm. is a stronger factor for them. So I find also there's a lot more time wasters on those sites in my own experience, but that arrangement might work better for a lot of people, particularly if you're the sort of person who wants to work.
But also they're not a dollar a day anymore.
Yes, you're right. I should clarify. That was like, a long time ago.
They're not even
ago.
That cheap.
They're not that cheap anymore. No, you're right. You're right. Especially if you're advertising.
Comparatively.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you're advertising day in, day out on those sites, they may actually end up being more expensive than the other sites. Mm. But
if
you want to, sort of chuck an ad up for a shorter notice period and with a little bit lower stakes, you can try those. And I certainly found them beneficial to me back in the day to that style of work that I was doing. Now that I am so picky about planning my weeks in advance and I have the luxury of working from my home and being able to not have to cram as many bookings into a hotel stay as I can, I can afford to advertise on a site where I might not have as much short notice visibility, if that makes sense. Hope I've described that well.
I was also thinking about, don't know what the word for it is, but like internal advertising, self-generated. I don't know what it is, but because it is not uncommon in sex work to lose your account on different sites, on social media sites, or on advertising platforms, mm-hmm. or for the advertising platform itself to disappear, as we all experienced in 2018. I think that what you're seeing a lot of sex workers do, a lot of independent workers do, is have their own newsletter or have their own way of reaching out to their clients and or potential clients. I use my newsletters primarily 95% just for announcing tours. So people sign up to my newsletter and they say what city is their closest. And so then when I plan a tour for that city, I send out a newsletter that says, hey, I'm coming to your city. And I just select the people that have said that they're closest to that city. I send that out to them. And I usually will do that at least 48 hours before I announce the tour publicly. So they've got the first opportunity to book in. So that just gives them a little bit of an incentive, to be on the list, right? And I think that because in this business, like so many businesses, your regulars are your bread and butter. Mm-hmm. So obviously this isn't super useful advice for if you're literally just starting out and you haven't had any clients, but once you've had a few, it's so beneficial to reach out and say, hey, do you want to see me again? Basically. Now there's all different ways people do this. I think obviously you need to be very, very careful about the way the clients are comfortable being contacted. For instance, sending a text message that says, hey, like sexy,
I'm in town again.
Do you want to fuck me again? Like, yeah, probably like not the most discreet thing, yeah. Right? People do it. I don't think it's, I wouldn't suggest that it will gain you the most trust with your client base.
Well said.
But if it's something where they can opt in and they can say, yes, I want to receive text messages or yes, I want to receive emails, then that's great. There's still always the chance that they'll say that and then 2 years later they've got a partner all of a sudden and then they regret, you know, but that's outside of your control. And, you know, it depends how you word things. Again, saying like, hey, let's fuck. Like, I don't know if that's, it might be your brand. I don't know. But just saying, hey, I'm in town, just so you know, could be useful. But, or, you know, even if you're not touring, it could be, you know, reaching out. You can offer specials. There's also, like, whatever. There's all sorts of things you can do. But just keeping in mind that the people you've seen in the past, just because they've not booked you again, it doesn't mean they had any problems with you or that they don't want to see you again. They may have just forgotten,
yeah,
which is not great. Like if you're that forgettable, that's unfortunate. But
people do get caught, you know, up in life.
You got to remind people. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I've definitely reached out to clients.
Yeah.
And I feel like I don't want to be a little bit of a pick me here, but I often, especially if it's been like a year or something, it's not, and again, yeah, I'm being very cautious of how I contact people. I don't want to get people in any trouble. Mm. But if I've reached out after a long time, it's because I've thought of that person and I had a good booking with them and I'm like, oh, like I'm not sort of doing a hustle of like, oh, you want to come and see me? But I'm like, how you doing? Like, is, you know, you're good sincerely. And I'm not opening it up for let's have a 2-hour chat. But sometimes I just want to check in. And these are people who do come back maybe once every 3 or 4 years now. Like I've found, you know, but sometimes I'm like, are things good? What's going on? In fact, it's just popped into my head one person that I really need to chase up because I want to know how they're doing. I feel like that's fairly harmless. And I feel like if they want to book, then they do. And sometimes, yeah, people have just lost freaking track and they go, oh, Jenna, she was, do you know what? That was actually really fun. I might. Yeah.
Or yeah. Or you've changed advertising sites. You've lost a platform, etc., and they can't find you again.
Very true. Yeah.
Because that happens for us.
Yeah.
My tiny little tip on contacting people out of the blue. And I mean, I only do it with the mass newsletters anyway. But is to not use their name in the message.
So you can say
because
plausible deniability.
Well, then they can say. Yeah. Must have been a wrong number.
Yeah, sure.
There's always just gives them that little bit of an out just, if they need it.
Just on the topic of your newsletter, what about having your own website in terms of advertising? Do you think that is vital or?
It absolutely blows my mind that there is anyone working independently in this industry who doesn't have a website. I don't understand how people do it. It honestly blows my mind. Like I've had one since the very beginning. Like I was like, I'm starting a business, so I need a website. Like to my brain, those things just go hand in hand. Obviously there can be costs associated with that, but there are definitely ways of doing it cheaper, doing a simple website. I just design my own. Like I've never hired anyone to do anything. And yeah, as I said, there are costs. I pay for a domain name, all of that. But you know, I just don't know how. I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand how anyone can do it without a website, but heaps do. Heaps
yeah.
do. So you don't have to. I also know so many, and Holly was one of these people, who for years have been saying, oh, yeah, I've really got to finish my website. Oh, I've got to get a website together. Like that is one of the most common things I hear sex workers saying. And I'm like, just do it, babe. Sit down one night and do it. Like, what's happening? There's some weird block.
No, yeah.
About websites.
I didn't have an interest in having a website at all until, last year. I think I've only had a website now for a year. But it just didn't interest me. And I felt like I was getting enough business without. Like, it didn't feel like it was very impactful. So I did quite well without a website for a long time. And then, I just sort of thought, it adds to that legitimacy. And I feel like it has all of the information in one place. And as you said, we can lose our platforms. It's nice to have, and to diversify those. So I eventually decided.
I mean, we can also lose our websites because they're always hosted by some, you know, unless you are, you have your own servers and you're hosting your own website. Yeah. That's also a risk.
True.
Because we are whores.
We are whores.
But
it's nice to have.
Yeah, for me, that's the big thing is the information.
Yeah.
Like, because advertising platforms are quite limited by what you can put up there. They have certain categories that you can fill out,
definitely.
You know. Whereas my website just has. Like, there's no possible question a client can ask that hasn't already been answered on the website, which is how I like things to be, because I don't want them to talk to me off the clock.
Whoa.
You know, not my vibe. So
say it how you see it, girl.
I think I've made that clear on the podcast.
Yeah.
I think people know that about me.
So that's, yeah, that's a bit of a.
But did you notice any change having the website? Has it made any difference in terms, not
I don't think
in terms of amount of money you've received, but like. Or amount of bookings, but
no, I don't think for my business yes, in terms of the booking side of things, I don't think it has made a difference. In terms of being able to just send people a link to my website, that really helps when people are sort of asking me or you get time waster inquiries. That really helps to just send that through. And yeah, just for my own referencing sometimes, I don't think, from a monetary perspective or a frequency of bookings or a new clients or anything, I don't think anyone's found me.
Yeah.
I think my SEO is not very good or anything like that. But I do think it probably has added a layer of legitimacy and just efficiency or, for me. I think it's been helpful. But
yeah, look, I haven't bothered with SEO either.
Mm. But I did not make mine myself. I had no idea even where to begin. There are resources out there. People can help you within the industry, but I just did not feel like it was something I wanted to do. So I paid somebody else to make it for me. Obviously, I wrote my own copy and sort of plotted out how I would like the site. But look, it was not a cheap exercise. So I definitely think if you are time poor, paying somebody else might be the option, but if you, if that's something you feel like you can dedicate a few hours to, Jenna's website is great, and I think there's a lot of workers who've made their own website, and I think, it's definitely worth putting in a couple of hours for.
And I mean, I think you can see the difference. Like, I don't think my website looks like it was designed by a web designer, but I also don't care. I don't think that matters, as long as it's functional and has the information you need, you know. So you mentioned time wasters.
I did.
Shall we talk about time wasters?
Let's talk about time wasters.
Because when you are new to the industry, they will descend upon you.
They can smell it, can't they?
They smell it.
Mm.
Well, and I know this from, you know, me saying every now and then I'll put up an ad on a random website and I get them.
Yeah.
Because they think I'm new. They've never seen me before.
Yeah.
And they love a newbie.
Mm.
So you are going to get them. We all still get them, but really at the beginning, they're like flies to honey.
Yeah. And I think when you're new in the industry, you enter it with open eyes. Like you've heard probably, and not always, but you've probably heard about time wasters and you expect that there's going to be people who are not 100% genuine. But it takes a while sometimes of being in the industry to become really attuned to the styles of time wasting and the ways that some of these people go about it because it's not so simple.
Yeah.
I think I used to really respond quite eagerly to one word initial contacts. So hi. And I'm still polite. I still respond to them. I know a lot of workers will not even answer if it's just one word, but I'll give them a little chance. And I find it almost never. It would be an infinitesimally small amount of people who actually follow through with the booking after contacting me with hi. I sometimes believe it could be an English is second language, issue that they, maybe aren't as confident with introducing themselves or that sort of thing, or a cultural, thing where they, not as sure how to go about it or even, just shy. Like I think there's a lot of people who are, just really nervous and they think that it's like a dating site and that you just sort of say hi. But even on a dating site, you wouldn't approach somebody with a one word introduction, like hi. Like I feel
I certainly wouldn't.
Any social interaction in life probably should start with hi, how are you? My name is blah, blah. I'd like XYZ, whether that's a social thing or a business thing. So just, it speaks to me from like, it feels like it comes from a place of just not seeing you as a human being to message and say hi. But that's my own perception on that. So for me, that rings as time waster. It's not for everyone. Yeah. I know some people will get bookings from those people, but often that is somebody who's not really invested in going ahead, in my experiences.
Yeah, I've had a lot of newbies to the industry ask the question, like, should I respond to them? And I think that's really dependent on your circumstances, because there is a chance that every now and then someone who just writes hi or hey or whatever will turn into a booking. It's a small chance. Like, there's not many.
Yeah.
But if you've got the time to sit there messaging with them, and if you're not getting your hopes up, then why not? There's no harm.
Take the chance,
right?
For sure. Yeah,
take the chance, yeah. But if you're very busy because you've got like a civilian job or whatever, and it's costing you to respond to those messages, or if it's getting your hopes up and then you're finding yourself getting upset because they just feel like they're wasting your time, which is what a lot of them are doing, then no, it's not worth it. So there's no hard and fast rule. You may be able to get something out of it, but you got to make your own choice about whether it's worth it.
Exactly. And I think, a lot of these inquiries, that's what it comes down to, is what you value more. Do you value that opportunity that potentially you might get a little bit of money out of this person? Or is your time right now more valuable? Mm. And that's what you decide. Mm. And your energy, your psychological energy.
I think there's kind of a general rule that a lot of us have, that I used to have when I accepted messages from people, which was like 3 to 5 messages should be all it takes to organize a booking. And if by your third message to them, you're not getting, you know, specifics about when and where and how and what, you know, it's not getting locked down, they're probably wasting your time. Or that may not be their intention, but it is the outcome.
I think that's a fantastic guideline. I think that's a really good, starting place. Another way to identify time wasters, which I didn't really recognize early on, and I feel a little bit embarrassed to, I don't want to tell people how dumb and silly I was, but it's not dumb.
What is it?
You don't know until you know. Just that sort of repeated carrot dangling with no commitment or, and this doesn't tend to come from like an initial inquiry, but you might have a client who books once and everything sort of goes okay. And then they contact you for the next couple of years. And every time they're 100%. Like, oh, I'm going to book, I've got this coming up, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do. And because you've met them once, you think, well, this person's legitimate. And so, I guess my point is that somebody who has been a client can still be a time waster.
100%. It's like secondary time wasteritis.
It is.
That's a thing. And I think most of us had that experience of like, I've always given someone more time if they've booked me in the past because my brain is like, they're not wasting my time. They are a legitimate client, and they are, but it doesn't mean they're intending on booking me again. Or maybe they are intending, but they're not doing it. So the outcome for me is the same.
And you just commit so much. And it's not even about committing, but you maybe engage them a little bit more in that lead up, or you'll work out some logistics for it, or they'll talk about certain services that they're interested in and you'll plot those or whatever. And then the booking doesn't come through. And that is such a letdown when you start to anticipate this booking coming through, and then it doesn't. And then, you know, that can be really frustrating. Mm. Another one that I used to miss a lot when I was quite new in the industry, well, not miss, but again, I was just a little bit naive, was strangers, people who you have not met for bookings before, coming in with huge promises right off the bat. If you have somebody you've never met before coming in and say, I want to take you overseas, I want to go on a 4-week booking, I'm going to buy you this, I'm going to take you on a shopping trip to designer shops and buy you a whole lot of designer outfits, or here's another one I heard a lot in my early days. Especially, this is a red flag, approaching somebody who does not advertise as a dom and saying, oh, I really want a fin dom, I'll give you access to my bank account, here's my login, and you can take all my money. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is. There are exceptions to those rules. There are people out there, and particularly I think if you do advertise as a dominatrix or a fly me to you, primarily escort or whatever, people who want those things might come directly to you. But generally, if somebody approaches you that you've never had an interaction with before and they're offering you something that just sounds incredibly good and wild and lucrative, I'd be very skeptical.
Mm. I think especially when you're new to the industry as well.
Yeah.
Like, for a long time, if somebody I'd never met before inquired about an overnight or a 24-hour booking or something, I was like, that's not like, why on earth would you outlay that cost without knowing anything about me? These days, I have first timers that will book overnights, and I'm a lot more comfortable with that. But and not all workers are comfortable with that, I should say. No. So if you don't want to spend a night with someone you've never met before, that is fair enough. But it's something I'm comfortable with, and now clients feel like they know me well, or you know, future clients feel like they know me well enough to book something like that in without actually having met. And often it's somebody who's coming from overseas or something, so they can't do a shorter booking beforehand, you know, and that's all fine. But when I was new to the industry, I was like, what the it's a bit sus. You can definitely respond and you can go through with it, but you know, this is probably a good segue into like screening and taking deposits and stuff. So yeah, in terms of screening your clients, we've said on the podcast a million times that every sex worker at every part of the industry screens in some way. We can't go into much detail at all about how we screen our clients, because putting safety information out there publicly reduces how safe that's able to keep us. Ooh, it's not a great sentence, but we can't talk about it too much. What we can say is that it's really important to get to know sex workers, to speak to your peers, build up relationships with them, and that's how the information will be shared. Also, as we talked about in part one, go to your local peer organization, and they can certainly give you information. But one form of screening, for some people view it this way, not everyone, is taking deposits. And this is the thing with any screening, like there's a toolkit. So there's different ways that everyone screens, and we all have our own ways that we're comfortable with. And I think when you're newer, starting out with a variety of options is helpful. Because, you know, it can be a struggle when you don't have a reputation to gain their trust. And again, that all just comes from stigma, and it's bullshit, but it is what it is. Whereas I think Holly and I now, we've had enough fucking awful experiences, and we have enough of a reputation that we do not budge on our screening. This is the information we ask for, and you give it or you don't get a booking. It's as simple as that. But when you're starting out, when I have spoken to people who are starting out, I've suggested you have your ideal, but you can have different options. And taking a deposit can be one of those options, which is just, it doesn't prove that they're a good person. It doesn't prove it. Screening doesn't prove that anyone's a good person.
Well, true.
But taking the deposit does say that they are serious about turning up and paying you money. It's still like, I take deposits for most of my bookings these days. I still sometimes have people that no show. And I'm like, well, great. I didn't have to do any work and I got to keep the deposit. Cool. It still happens. But it happens far less.
Yeah.
Far less. And I've been compensated for that time that I've set aside. Exactly.
Exactly.
But it can be really hard to take deposits, I think, when you're new.
Yes.
Because people feel like they're sending money to a stranger.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all grew up being told about not sending money to random people on the internet. And that is like good advice generally, you know. But at the same time, whenever I book in for my hair appointment, my beauty, my massage, my nails, all of those, I pay a deposit.
Mm.
And then I go, you know, I guess the difference is that there's a shop front there.
Yeah.
You know, I know the name of the business, blah, blah, blah. But it's still quite standard.
Yeah. And this is why that legitimacy does matter as an escort, and trying to build some reputation online or something that gives proof or perceived proof to clients that you are a real person and you're not just one isolated ad that might come down tomorrow and they'll never know what happened to their money. Works.
And I think it's important to know that deposits don't have to be a lot of money.
Yes.
Like a $20 deposit, for instance, if you've hired a hotel and you've set aside the time and they don't show up, $20 is not going to cover. You will have lost money.
Yeah.
But $20 does, it just says, yes, I'm intending to follow through with this.
Yeah.
So if you're lucky enough to be able to work from home or you don't have many overheads, you can take a small deposit. You can take $15, whatever. And that just says, yes, I'm intending on turning up. And then from their end, if they're intending on paying, say, $500, whatever it is, I'm picking a number out of nowhere,
yeah, sure.
Then if they lose $15 or $20, it really shouldn't be that big a deal. It's not great. Yes. No one wants to lose money. But I would suggest to clients out there that that's worth the risk.
Mm-hmm.
Because absolutely. No one's running a scam for $15, $20 is that's a lot of work for a scam. Like that basically is a job that they're doing.
Mm. I'm adding that to my list of side hustles right now. Create $15 hooker scam. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
yeah, we definitely are in privileged positions now. But when we started out, I assure you our screening was nowhere near as secure as it is now. And we definitely recognize that, particularly when you're starting out, it can feel, one, really daunting to ask for these things. You feel like, well, why should I be asking for this when I don't have much of a reputation, or I'm only new, or my face isn't on my ad, so why am I asking for this person to prove who they are? And, you know, some clients will come back with that sort of retort and make you question how you're running your business. And I totally appreciate that sometimes you just need that money. Your bill has to be paid and you go, well, you know what? It's worth the risk if they don't turn up, or if they do and they're just not the nicest person right now. I just need the bill to be paid. And I recognize the financial hardship and the stress that makes you a lot of people just need to or decide to, sorry, to not screen to because, yeah, there's so many factors.
No, but this is why I say everyone screens because.
Yes. Well, you're right. No, you're right.
Because your gut is a screening tool.
You're correct.
Right?
100%.
The way someone writes their messages to you is a screening tool. So that, like, there is always a level of assessment going on. It's the same with somebody working on the street who approaches or a customer approaches them. There is a level of assessment of whether you're going to take the booking or not.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's always happening. But
you're correct.
A more formal screening method for sure is and yes, Holly's spot on. When I first started out, I did not have formal screening methods for a long time, a very long time.
And neither did I. And it wasn't until, I don't want to take this down a really dark path, but it wasn't until something really bad happened and I was not able to take any recourse and keep myself safe that I went, wow, I right now know what's more important to me. And still at that stage, it wasn't necessarily as formal as my screening is now, but it just meant I took heightened precautions. And then over time, again, from experienced and witnessed bad events that I decided to step that up. And again, also from my own privilege and elements of financial security that meant that I could afford to turn away people who would not comply with those requirements. Simple things for me and different people do them in different ways, but particularly before I requested as much sort of real world information or did other screening procedures would be things like I did install security cameras at the front of my place. I would get clients to park in the driveway where I could see their car so that I would have a make and a model at least, or it would be on the security camera. Just little things like that. And I'm not giving these as advice for how to screen. And I'm certainly not telling clients that these are a way that somebody is screening you. But for me personally, I found other ways that would help me just to feel like I didn't have a stranger in my house that could cause me harm. That's,
And one of the biggest aspects of screening is when people push back on those instructions.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the best tools in your belt. If you say, please park in the driveway and they don't, you have the right to not let them in. You know, if like choosing not to follow your instructions is a gigantic red flag, because how the fuck can you trust that they'll follow your instructions while their penis is inside of you then? You know, like it just, that is the biggest red flag, and they will come up with all sorts of excuses why they can't follow your instructions.
Yeah.
Most of the time it'll be that they think you're going to tell their wife, even though I don't know why the fuck they think we give a shit about their wife or them, frankly, in that situation. Like we don't care about their marriage is my point. But okay, cool. Like you're scared, I'll tell your wife. I'm scared I'm going to die. Like that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. So, and I think this leads me on to the other thing, which is talking about this idea of screening when you're starting out. My assumption, and I'm sure there are listeners who will say that I'm wrong, but my assumption is most people who are listening to this to get advice on how to become an independent escort are in a position of privilege.
Okay.
If you are somebody, well, yeah, because I think those of us who fell into the job and didn't have, we didn't have these resources. We weren't sitting there going, I'm going to sit here and listen to a few episodes of a podcast and really see if this is right for me. We were just fucking in it, and we were like, well, shit, I've got to make some money, you know?
I feel like if a podcast had been around, I would do it. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I didn't fall into this because I needed the money as much as I wanted to do this, and I went to do, I sorted out.
But like, that's so, such a huge privilege.
It is. No, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you're in a position of researching, then you're in a position of privilege.
Oh, absolutely. So a lot of people are just going to, if you need to do it, you need to do it. True, you're not going to take the time to research. I'm with you.
No, because you've got to earn money.
You got to get the money.
But the people that are listening to this, and my experience with the majority of people, because I offer these Pick Jenna's Brain sessions, and most, if not all, either the people coming to those sessions are like working in a brothel and they want to transition to independent or something like that, or they have a full-time civilian job and they're thinking about starting sex work. That is the most common one. So I would say that if you have full-time employment and you're wanting to break into sex work, then there is no excuse for you to not be really strict with your screening.
Okay. Yeah,
if you don't need the booking to pay your bills that week or that month or whatever, then you can afford to be really particular about what you expect from your clients.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it means, you know, you're going to get a lot of people who are frustrated or won't comply with it, you know. But again, making a lot of assumptions. But if you've already got full-time employment, I don't know why you'd be taking any risks.
I think that's very fair.
Once we get on a roll. Yeah. So the other thing that's key to talk about, I think, and we can't go into too much detail, is that it is bloody, it's a freaking nightmare to receive deposits. So this is the other thing that makes it harder. You will have heard sex workers talk about Beam, sex workers in so-called Australia. We talk about Beam, which is a similar app to like Venmo or Cash App or whatever. That's, you definitely want to have that if you're a sex worker in Australia. A friend of mine, that's her only way of accepting deposits, and she does regularly get clients who are like, oh, I can't, the app doesn't work for me, or I can't download it, or whatever the fuck. And that's unfortunate, but that's her screening. And the other, because the problem is that our privacy is at risk when giving out bank information. And I'm not going to go into more details about that, but that's the problem. So another option is gift cards. But as you know, gift card, you can't pay your rent with a gift card. So it's not ideal. But again, especially if it's a smaller amount, you can get a Coles or a Woolies gift voucher or something. Especially if it's only $20 or $50, then you're just going to use it on your groceries. So that's kind of fine. But that is one option because they don't need to know all your information. They just need to know the email to send it to. There are websites like Prezi. And then some other one I got a gift card from doing this research thing the other day. What was that called? Flexi e-gift card.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
E-gift post. I don't know what it is. But with those sites, you can then move the gift card to be for Maya or JB Hi-Fi or whatever it is that you want to use it for. Gift cards are an option.
I just wanted to make a note that I have heard that Prezi has been identifying sex worker accounts and manually making you have to call up and like get the thing put through. So just a little warning on that. Historically, they've not been awful, but I know I certainly had some times where, and then I'd call and I'd say, what's the problem? And they're like, oh no, we just needed you to call. And I'm like, well, that just, you know, and since then, particularly in recent months, I've heard numerous workers say that, they put it through a different email that not linked to their sex work stuff, and it went through, but then somebody tried to send it, and so they've been flagged somewhere on a system. So just a quick note on that one. But God damn it.
I mean, I'm waiting for the day that Beam starts booting us off. I can't believe it hasn't happened yet. Anyway, that is Beem. And if you're a sex worker in so-called Australia or a client, you should have it. Okay, so a question that comes up sometimes is, do sex workers need to provide invoices for their clients?
No.
So the thing is that legally, the answer is yes. because anybody, yeah. if it's over $82.50 or whatever the limit is, legally any business has to provide in so-called Australia, has to provide an invoice if the customer asks for it. But obviously there's a big problem with that. And obviously I think, you know, it's very clear. Holly and I are not accountants. We are not lawyers. We are not financial advisors. We are not business experts, blah, blah, blah. But I have heard from multiple accountants who have said that it doesn't make any sense to invoice in your case. I have heard from one worker who spoke to somebody at the ATO, which is the Australian Tax Office, who they said, no, we understand that you would not give out invoices. So, again, if you Google it, legally the answer is yes. But I think what's really important is that there are only two circumstances in which somebody would ask you for an invoice as a sex worker. One would be if they are looking to have your services paid for via the NDIS, in which case they would tell you that's what it's for. I'm no expert on that. Neither of us are. I would advise getting in touch with Touching Base. They are excellent with that sort of stuff. It's all tricky because obviously everything with the NDIS, anything with government schemes is tricky. But in that case, so I have provided invoices because I have seen clients who, and I'm being paid via the NDIS. But every time I've done it, it has been a problem because they've come back and said, oh no, but your ABN is suppressed. And I've been like, yeah, duh. Obviously, I'm a sex worker. Of course, my ABN is suppressed. There you go. There's another dot point. Suppress your ABN, obviously. But like duh, like you can't say that people can use the NDIS to access sexual services and then have a problem with those sexual services suppressing their ABNs. Crazy. Anyway, but that is a separate, very niche little thing. It also, while the judgment has been made that it is appropriate for people to use NDIS funding to access sexual services, it's not very common. Mm-hmm. So people saying to you, oh, yeah, the NDIS is going to pay for it, I'd be wanting a bit more information around that because it's actually not that common that people do get that approved on their plan. Again, talk to Touching Base though. So the only other reason a client would ask for an invoice is as a power play.
Yes.
Because what, they're claiming it as a work expense? Like, what are they claiming their hooker on? That's why you need an invoice. Or for your record keeping, you can just write it down. You don't need, like, there is no, the only reason will be that they've read, oh, they have to give me an invoice and oh, that's going to make them uncomfortable or they'll have to give me their real name or blah,
exactly.
blah, blah.
There's no other reason. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. There is no reason. They do not need one, so no, don't give it to them.
yeah, I would say no is a perfectly fine answer in this situation, and I would remind you that if you are providing an invoice with any identifying numbers on it, like an ABN, that you can be self-doxing, so you need to be so careful with these things.
But, of course, please speak to an accountant or similar. Mm-hmm. If you're having any problems with this sort of thing, we are not giving out legal advice.
I am not giving financial or legal advice, so do not sue me. Thank you.
Yeah. We anal.
We anal.
So we anal.
Or we anar.
Not a. Ah. Oh, yeah. We anar.
So do with that what you will.
What an end to the episode. What a way to finish things off. We anal.
Yeah, we're pretty good.
We should probably explain that on Reddit, or on the internet, I guess. But to say I am not a lawyer, you say I-A-N-A-L.
Yeah.
So it's like giving someone advice and you're like, but I'm not a lawyer. I anal. So we're saying we anal. We are not lawyers.
And I-A-N-A is I'm not an accountant as well. Or I am a spicy accountant.
We've just made that one up.
Yeah, that was not real. Yeah.
We, as usual, thought we'd get through more, but instead we talked and talked and talked. So we're going to wrap it up there. And next time, part three, will be us talking about the actual booking itself. That's when we'll get into the booking and the hooking.
Mm. A massive thank you to the cutest patrons in the world. Thank you to our new, very generous somebody, Jeremy. our even more generous somebodies, the Ashley Stafford, the Rhiannon Rhodes, the Peaches Wild, Nomad, Adele, Andrew, Lachlan, Leslie, Sub London, Mr. E, NK, Scott C, Simon, Steve, Timmy, Wheezy, Luke, Frankie, Is Lost in Thoughts, Cuddle Koala, Stanley Doolittle, insert witty comment here, Den, Damo, and Tom. And a extra extremely thank you to our extremely generous somebodies, Aaron, Andrew, Adam Smith, Pete, the Sienna Saint, Tim, David, and Tom.
See you next time.
Bye.
Please look out for us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon. Our name everywhere is Somebody You Pod, as in podcast. Our Patreon starts at just $3 a month, and you can get all of our episodes ad-free and a day early, plus bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes action, bloopers, and more. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the voices of sex workers. And remember, somebody you love might just be a sex worker.